Our Old Testament reading continues the story of Nehemiah and the joy of rebuilding, and we're chapter 2, verses 11 and following. And this is Nehemiah's first time in seeing the wall. He heard about the condition of the wall and how deplorable it was from others, and now this is his first time to see it. So verse 11 and following. So I went to Jerusalem, and there were 3 days. Then I rose in the night, and I had a few men with me, and I told no one what God had put in my heart to do in Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate. I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I went on the fountain gate into the king's pool, but there was no animal that was under me to pass. Then I went up in the night valley and inspected the wall, and I turned back and entered the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. And I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were there what God had given me to work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble that we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates are burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer suffer derision." And I told them of the hand of my God that had been good for me, and also the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, "Let us rise and build." So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Amorite, servant of Gershom the Arab, heard of it. They jeered at us and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" Then I replied to them, "The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we his servants will arise and build. But you have no portion or right of the claim in Jerusalem." Then Elisha the high priest rose up with his brothers and priests, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated as far as the Tower of the Hundred and as far as the Tower of Hanel. And next to him, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zakut, the son of Imri, built. The sons of Hanasad built the fish gate. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. Next to them, Meriboth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakoth, repaired. Next to them, Meshulam, son of Berechiah, son of Masulazir, repaired. And next to him, Zadok, the son of Benah, repaired. And next to them, the Tekorites repaired, but their nobles would not stoop to serve the Lord. May the Lord bless his word to hearts and minds this morning. Well, we continue the series in Nehemiah and the Joy of Rebuilding, and this morning we're going to look at facing the realities of rebuilding. And first, I want to get started with something a little humorous. I heard about this Texas rancher that went over to visit a farmer in Israel, and this proud Israeli was showing me around his farm, and he said, "Here's where I grow tomatoes and squash, and over there a little bit of corn, and over there I built a play set next to the doghouse for my kids." And he was so proud of that. And the land was rather tiny, and so the Texan was surprised at how small it was. And so he looked at the Israeli and said, "Is this all your land?" And he said, proudly, he said, "Yes, this is all my land." And the Texan said, "Well, you mean this is all your land?" And then he said, "Yes, yes, this is really mine." And the Texan looked at him and said, "Well, son, back home in Texas, why, on my farm, why, before the sun comes up, I get in my car and I drive and I drive and I drive. And then when the sun sets, why, they're only halfway across the land." And the Israeli farmer looked at him and said, "Yeah, I used to have a car like that." You know, it's all about perspective, isn't it? And so we look at Nehemiah this morning, and he's got a great perspective, but he's got to see the realities of what it's going to require to rebuild. And I think the book of Nehemiah helps us with some truths that we all have, because in some sense we all face some loss, some ruins, some devastation, and some dashed dreams in life. And Nehemiah offers us some truths on rebuilding our lives, our church, and our community that I think are very special. And just to recap again, then, Nehemiah takes place after the destruction of Jerusalem by Babylon, which had taken place between 597 and 587 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar, the great general and king, went through Jerusalem, and he destroyed it, besieged it first, and came back and destroyed it. He leveled the walls, the temples, many of the homes, and he took 10,000, by his own accounts, of the best and the brightest, best young men and women. He took them away to Babylon, the capital city in a foreign land, and he did it for 2 reasons. First of all, he wanted to sort of hold them hostage so the people back in the homeland wouldn't rebel. And the second thing was he wanted to educate them in the cultures and values that were his cultures and values. And he wanted to raise them to become leaders and then send them back to the homeland to rule with his values. And that was sort of a subtle way. And Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were among those young people. And they received a letter from Jeremiah. And the letter said to not rebel, but in fact to prosper in the land and to bless the land, but to hold true to their values and really to be salt and light, like just like Jesus challenged us, and so they did. Now, later, Nebuchadnezzar died. His kingdom went through a few successive of kids and grandkids that didn't do a very good job, and eventually was conquered by Cyrus the Great in 539 BC. Later took over the throne was Darius the Great in the Persian Empire. And then his grandson was this king, Artaxerxes. Nehemiah served the cupbearer. And so we pick up the story after decades that the city of Jerusalem has lied in ruin, even after Cyrus the Great had taken some revenue, some taxes to rebuild it, and they faced this reality. Now, Nehemiah had been born during this captivity, really never seen the city of Jerusalem himself. His heroes were probably Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so he'd grown up in the foreign land. But some Jews from Jerusalem come, from the Judean countryside, and they share with him just how bad the condition of the walls is in the city of Jerusalem, and he is heartbroken. But in his heartbreak, he has a vision, he has a dream of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And he prays about that dream. And God opens the door that he can share his burden with the king himself, King Artaxerxes. And King Artaxerxes asks him what his request is, and his request is to have time and even have resources to rebuild the ruin that was the walls of Jerusalem. And King Artaxerxes grants his request. It's really kind of an amazing thing. And God had no doubt put Nehemiah in a place, in a key place where he could make a difference. And sometimes we think about key places just in the church, but in fact, you know, we all have a key place. Maybe it's in a school, or maybe it's in a factory, maybe it's in a hospital, or wherever we are, we have a key place of ministry that God can use us in a key way. And so Nehemiah has this dream, he shares with the king, and the king is going to allow him to do this. And so he comes and he has heard about what it looks like in Jerusalem, but he hasn't seen it himself. And so we're recorded the first time, and he doesn't want all the voices, the negative voices there. He wants to see it himself, and so he takes a few trusted advisors out with him at night alone to take a look at this wall and the realities that it will take. You know, for all of us, and we have a dream, and we even have a prayer and willing to do the work, but we need to be able to face the realities of just what it will take to rebuild our lives and rebuild the church and rebuild those affected in our community and even around the world. And so Nehemiah is able to look at this in a clear way. And so this is what he says. He says, "So I went to Jerusalem, and I was there for 3 days. Then I rose and in the night, and with a few men with me, I told no one what God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate and by the dragon spring and by the dung gate." There was a good reason why they called it the dung gate, by the way. "And I inspected the walls of Jerusalem. They were broken down, and its gates were destroyed by fire. And then I went on to the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal that I rode on me to pass. It was so bad the animal couldn't even get through the gate. Then I went up in the night by the valley, inspected the wall. I turned back and entered the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. And then I yet to tell the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest what the vision was that God had placed in his heart." And so Nehemiah goes out there, and I wonder that he wasn't probably crestfallen just by the damage that was there. It's one thing to hear about it, but it's another thing to see it, the devastation. And this was the protection, the integrity of the city of Jerusalem that sort of allowed people to build and rebuild because they had no defense without it. And so he goes and he sees this incredible place of devastation, but he's willing to face the realities. And with that, the second thing is he's willing to accept the challenge that's before them. He has a clear vision of what it's going to require, but he's willing to accept the challenge. And I think in our own lives, when we see something, when we experience something in our life, and maybe it's our life or the life of our families or our church or our community, we see loss of a loved one, or we see financial ruin in a person's life, we see loss of a job or financial challenges, or we see, maybe we look around the world, we see the state of some of the children of the world who don't have parents to care for them or good homes in which to live, and all those other kinds of things. We see prejudice and we see unrest and warfare, and we see it with a clear eye, and yet we're willing to accept the challenge and make a difference and be salt and life in our world. And so Nehemiah, after this clear vision of what's going to take, then he assembles a group of people, and this is what he says in verse 17. "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer suffer derision. And I told them of the hand my God had been upon me for good, and also the words of the king had spoken to me. And they said to me, let us rise and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work." just a sort of a wonderful passage where Nehemiah sounds a clarion call to work and a challenge to sort of accept this challenge with the people. And I love this phrase, so they strengthen their hands for good work. Don't you love it when people are willing to get their hands dirty and to do something that's amazing? Now, not everyone was willing to do some work. There were some naysayers. There were some negative voices out there. And he goes on to say this: but when Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the Ammonite servant, and Geshem, the Arab, heard about it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" Notice they sort of twist this. In fact, the king had given his blessing to them. But Nehemiah is not distracted by the negative voices. He's not distracted by the jeering and the naysaying. He goes on to sound a very clear message and tell them they don't have a part in it, but God is going to do good things. And he said this: then I replied to them, "The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion or right to claim in Jerusalem." So he looks at the realities, he faces the realities, and he accepts that challenge, knowing all that it's going to take. And I think in our own life, we do face some difficulties, some loss, some ruins, some dashed dreams, but God can give us a dream, and we can pray and ask God's blessing for a new vision, and we can look at the realities of what it's going to take, and then we can, through God, we can accept that challenge. And then the next thing is to work shoulder to shoulder. And I love this passage. It's tedious in some ways, but Nehemiah doesn't want to leave anything out. And so it's amazing as he sort of sounds this challenge of what needs to take place, then he finds that people are willing to work shoulder to shoulder. Maybe not every single person, but the majority of people say that we're ready to work shoulder to shoulder. And this is what he says about that. He said, "Then Elisha, the high priest, rose up with his brothers and priests, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated it as far as the Tower of the Hundred and as far as the Tower of Hanel. And next to him, the men of Jericho built." They had seen walls found down before, obviously, from Jericho. "And next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. And the sons of Hasani built the fish cave. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. Next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakoth, repaired. Next to them, Meshulah, the son of Berechiah, son of Meshavah, repaired. And next to them, Zadok, the son of Bana, repaired. Next to them, the Tohukites repaired, but their nobles would not stoop to serve the Lord." You know, so lots of people working, but some people think they're too good to do some work and get their hands dirty, but that doesn't bother Nehemiah. He's inspired by the people that are willing to work shoulder to shoulder. In fact, if you read chapter 3, it just enumerates all the different people that are at work, and I just want to lift up some of those people. And so he goes on to say this: "And Joiada, the son of Pisha, and Mesullah, the son of Bezoda, repaired the gate of Yeshanah. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. It took a lot to these were huge gates, bigger than our doors, much bigger. Next to them repaired Malai the Gibeonite, and Jadon the Marathonite, the men of Gibeon and Mizpah, and the seat of the governor of province beyond the river. Next to them, Uziel, the son of Harai, goldsmith repaired." It's not easy to get jewelers to do something like that, right? Get their hands dirty, but he's got the goldsmith, the jewelers involved. And next to Hanani, one of the perfumers repaired. So somebody's got a perfume shop, and they're not used to getting their hands dirty either. So they're out there doing something. They repaired and restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. Next to them, Rebani, son of Huri, the ruler of half the district of Jerusalem, repaired. Next to them, Jedi, son of Harani, repaired opposite his house. Next to him, Hutsa, the son of Hezbon, repaired. Makalai, son of Haram, and Hasha, the son of Perthoah, repaired, and another section of the Tower of the Ovens. So the baker's area is being rebuilt. And next to him, Shalom, the son of Herod, repaired half the district of Jerusalem, repaired. He and his daughters, got his daughters out there doing this. And then Haram, and Hadam, the son of, repaired the Valley of the Gate, rebuilt and set its doors, its bolts, its bars, and repaired 1,000 cubits of the wall as far as the Dung Gate. And they repaired 1,000 cubits, which is a lot, but not willing to do the Dung Gate. And I can appreciate that they didn't want the crappy job, because you can believe that was a crappy job, right? But Malji, God bless Malji, the son of Reklah, ruler of the district of Beth Harakim, repaired the Dung Gate. Can you be happy that someone could repair the Dung Gate? I mean, God bless the person that's able to do the crappy job, because someone's got to do the crappy job. Got to get the Dung Gate repaired. And so we thank God for people like that. And it goes on to say all these different people. And some repaired the pool of Shiloh, the king's garden, another, an artificial pool. Some people repaired next to their house. Gary mentioned that this morning. And if they had a house near the gate, they repaired that. And then other people took different parts that maybe were far away from their home. Everybody found something to do, and they all worked shoulder to shoulder. And you know, that's what it takes for something big to happen. If your dream doesn't require other people to work, then maybe your dream isn't big enough. You know, whether it's your family members or whether it's the members in your class or maybe the members of the church or beyond that in the mission group. And we've got this Habitat home build coming up, and it's going to take lots of people working together. And it's great to help this one family. We can help them rebuild their lives and give them hope for the future. And we know all they've been through, but we know they've been through some difficulties, but we can make a difference. We might not be able to rebuild all of Lafayette, but we can take one family and say we're going to make a difference in their lives. And so in other ways, we rebuild shoulder to shoulder, and in our own lives, you know, sometimes maybe it's not physical devastation. Maybe we've faced the loss of a loved one, and even there, it takes other people, our family, our sisters and brothers, sort of bind together to face the loss and to sort of have a new dream and to have continued hope and peace and to work together as a family of faith. And we look at more work that needs to be done in our community and around the world. There's many things that are happening, and it was nice to have Jude here a few weeks ago to share what happened in Sri Lanka and how they faced devastation and loss, the loss of buildings, but also the loss of life, and how they're willing to rebuild. And so his burden is a seminary that will rebuild the lives of ministers that can go out and to lead the churches, and they together can do a great thing. And I challenge us that whatever we've been through, and maybe it's financial loss, the loss of a loved one, maybe it's through relationship difficulties or illness, someone in our family, there's lots of things we've been through. And sometimes we look at our church and say, well, it was grander 50 years ago, but we can have a fresh dream. We can face the loss and ruin and the dashed dreams, and God can give us a fresh vision, because God is also the God of the future, not just the God of the past. And so God can raise up a new people, and we can accept the challenge even after facing the realities and look at the dream and say we can accomplish this together if we're willing to work shoulder to shoulder. And so that's what I challenge us to do. I'll close with this thought, which was back in 2005 in August, the third largest storm to ever hit the United States mainland in recorded history. Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. I saw it in this path. It's just so large. And my nephew was down in New Orleans. I've been down in New Orleans a number of times doing some rebuilding projects with students from Purdue. And I said, man, you got to get out of there. I don't care what they say. That city's not built for a hurricane. And so he did that advice of other people, and he and his girlfriend left in his girlfriend's car and left his Jeep on the second story of Tulane University parking garage to come back a month or so later to see that there was a boat that had been washed next to it in this parking garage. But, you know, that hurricane was just devastation in immense proportion. And that December, and actually in that next spring, then I took a group of students from Purdue. We always took spring break off, and then students had talked me to going over Christmas break and going down as well. And I recall as we drove down to New Orleans and coming in on the highway, and I looked, and as far as I could see, there was just devastation in every direction. I mean, they're just ruins, and some people had torn off shingles on a roof to spell help us. And I just couldn't imagine devastation. You just see ruin in every direction as far as you could see. And I just thought to myself, man, I don't know that this city isn't beyond hope. I mean, I'm taking a group of college students, and we're just like, you know, we're throwing a straw at a hurricane. But we collected our faith, and we got to the church where we were working at, and we were working with Presbyterian Disaster Assistance. There were other groups there, and the church was there and had become sort of a place where people stayed, and they were deploying mission groups, and the churches from all over the country brought missions groups in. I'll tell you, the churches did an amazing job. And so it was beyond the scope of any one group or any one person, but we had some sections, so we divided into teams and looked at what we were going to do, and different teams or different things. We were rebuilding a roof. Sometimes we were busting up stuff so we could spray the mold and get that rid of, and then get rid of that, and then put plaster in there. We're doing all kinds of things. And at the end of the week, we made an impact, but we certainly didn't rebuild all the city of New Orleans. But as we went down to the French Quarter and we listened to people's stories, the people had hope because people were coming from all over the country. Different churches were there, and people were praying, and they knew they were the hearts and lives of people, and people were doing different things. And some teachers were coming from all over the country to teach the kids that needed help, and the schools had been so damaged, and some people thought that was beyond hope. But people, one by one, shoulder to shoulder, began to work together, and teams worked shoulder to shoulder. And we left. There was still a lot of work to be done. There's still some work to be done in New Orleans, but it's a vastly different place. And the music and the life of the people, and of course we enjoyed jambalaya and gumbo and all kinds of things when we were there, but most of all we would share the heart of the people. They were so inspired that people were there to help, and it wasn't just the building, it was also the sense of prayer and the teamwork and the heart of what was there. And today, my nephew now has a law practice down there and able to visit and see a tremendous city with new life and vitality because they rebuild. And it took a dream. It took people accepting the realities of being there, but also being willing to work shoulder to shoulder. And so I challenge us to remember that no dream is too big with the blessing of God Almighty. And so whether we face devastation in our own life from, you know, financial difficulties or losing a loved one or illness or whatever it is, then God can raise up new hope and new things. And if we're willing to have a dream and ask God to bless it with our prayers and then face the realities, accept the challenge, and then work together. And so also as a church, we can do that, a new dream. And God is the God of the future, and I challenge us to look at the dream and to work together and to find our place as we work together and make a difference in our church and a community and around the world, because nothing is impossible with God and when people of God work together. Will you join me in prayer? Lord, sometimes we're so devastated, no doubt like Nehemiah was, as he looked at the actual devastation of the wall and the conditions around it. And yet he lifted it up to you because you placed a dream in his heart that you were willing to bless. So Lord, as we do look around our own lives, our families, and our church and our community and around the world, we see real need. We see real devastation and hurt. And you've never told us to not be able to grieve and to face the hurt of our heart. But then you also breathe new hope into our lives and you wipe away the tears. As Jesus himself said, he came to set the captives free, give hope for those who are poor and in prison and heartbroken. And so we are your body, your hands and feet. So help us to be willing to dream. Help us to be willing to, having faced the realities, to also accept the challenge and then to work together to accomplish great things, because we know that nothing is impossible with you. Through Christ our Lord, we pray. And all God's people said, Amen.